Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. Listen on demand wherever you get your podcasts or watch us live on YouTube.
Might not be the happiest Friday here in Washington for House Speaker Mike Johnson, because after this threat for a while has been lingering, perhaps now the first steps that could lead to actually ousting him have been taken by Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene. It is not a privilege resolution yet, and yet the motion to vacate has been filed, waiting to be acted upon at potentially any time now. As for the reason why, it appeared because Mike Johnson made the decision to work with Democrats to fund the government. Here was the congresswoman from Georgia earlier today on the steps of Capitol Hill.
This is a betrayal of the American people. This is a betrayal of Republican voters. And the bill that we were forced to vote on forced Republicans to choose between funding to pay our soldiers and in doing so, funding late-term abortion.
You heard it and saw it live as it happened here on Bloomberg. That was less than an hour ago. I'm Joe Matthew alongside Kaylee Lyons. Welcome to Bloomberg Radio and TV as we begin our conversation with Congresswoman Nicole Malliotakis, the Republican from New York, is with us now live from Capitol Hill, having voted no on that legislation. Before we start talking about the ins and outs of motion to vacate, Congresswoman, why was this not worth your vote today?
You know, I just cannot continue to vote to fund this president's agenda. At the end of the day, we have a crisis at our border. It is Joe Biden's making. He instituted policies using his own authority that has dismantled the border security. And this legislation would give him the money to continue doing what he's doing, which is allowing people to enter into the country. Customs and Border Protection agents are directed to release these people into the interior. They are not being detained or deported. They are being sent to cities like mine. It has become unsustainable, and it's unsafe. And it's unfair to the people that I represent, who are having shelters being put in their districts and seniors being kicked out of residences to make way for migrants.
Okay.
And I'm just not going to fund this.
Well, Congresswoman, is it not then unfair to your constituents as well that a bipartisan border package that the president did agree to that would have tightened many measures at the border was not even given a vote in the House? If
it wasn't even given a vote in the Senate. And you should have the same concern about H.R. 2 that we passed out of the House that would actually secure the border. And the Senate won't give it a vote either. So it works both ways here, and I'm happy to work with the Senate to hash something out. And I was hoping that's what our speaker would have done, is to make sure that there was some border security measures here. Because let's be clear, the president did this using his own authority. He can easily undo it. The reason we don't have a secure border right now is because he has used discretion to dismantle policies of the previous administration. The thing is, the Senate bill simply gave him some more discretion. But if he's not using the current discretion he has, what makes you think he's actually going to do something to actually solve this problem? And that is why I say, look, we need to reinstate the policies, if not of the previous administration, at least have your Secretary of Homeland Security rescind his direct to the Border Patrol agents. They're being told that if someone is convicted of a crime, that is not grounds to deport them, that on its own. That is wrong, and that is why we see these criminals coming into New York City. They're wreaking havoc, and they've assaulted police officers. We've seen stabbings. We've even seen a murder. And I'm not going to tolerate this anymore until the president decides he's going to actually work with us to really secure the border, or we just get a new president or a senator that would actually take up our legislation or negotiate with us on a package that will truly secure the border, not what they're saying they're doing, because the Senate bill, again, is discretionary. And if the president's not using his current discretion, what makes you think he's actually going to do something when that bill passes?
Well, you've got a lot of company, Congresswoman. The speaker failed to get a majority of the majority, which is something that a lot of people were using as an important metric on this vote. Before you joined us, we were talking about a motion to vacate now that's been filed by your colleague from Georgia, Marjorie Taylor Greene. Does Mike Johnson deserve that motion to vacate?
I don't think so. I think the problem is not our speaker. The problem is the president of the United States and the Senate majority leader. You got to remember, the Republicans control one third of the government here. We're outnumbered 2-1.
The speaker wanted this bill, though.
It's very difficult. Yeah, he did negotiate it. But the reason why I think we didn't get more of the things we wanted was because he's outnumbered 2-1. And the reality is, if people want to see the border being secured, they want energy production to lower costs of food and energy and utilities and inflation, then we need to have somebody who's actually going to pass our legislation over in the Senate, or a president who's willing to work with us on those objectives. The thing is, their goals are very different than ours. They want to allow millions of people to come into the country. They believe that, okay? Energy, the anti-energy policies coming out of this administration have driven utility costs in New York and elsewhere to go up significantly. American families can't afford the policies of this president, and we need to fight back. We can't do it unless we have more people, either in the Senate, like I said, a president. So I would say that I'm not ready to vacate the speakership again. You remember the disaster that created last time when all of the Democrats sided with a handful of Republicans to get rid of Speaker McCarthy. I think we had a weaker hand, by the way, in this negotiation because we lost a lot of leverage because of that. I think Kevin McCarthy would have done a better job negotiating for us. And by the way, Mike Johnson knows that the border security is our number one issue. And to come back to this conference with this legislation and not have significant policy changes from this administration is a failure.
Well, you have had many colleagues, including Congressman Chip Roy of Texas, suggesting that this House Republican conference is a failure, as you haven't really been able to get many conservative priorities across the finish line. And it does beg the question, with all of that perhaps being true, I'm sure you have an opinion on that, the idea that not much has been able to come out of this Congress. It's worth pointing out there is an election in November. Do you think moves such as this from Marjorie Taylor Greene further threaten the House majority?
I think it's unhelpful. And as I said, it's not that we need a new speaker. We need a new president and a new Senate majority leader. And as for, look, Chip Roy, I would say that we have been very successful in passing the legislation that the American people want. Remember, we passed our legislation to ramp up domestic energy production that would lower costs for American families and businesses. The Senate wouldn't take it up. We passed a bill to give parents more say in their children's education and have a right to see the material of the children, what their children are being taught in schools. The Senate wouldn't take it up. We passed a border security measure that was really tough and would do the job that needs to be done. The Senate wouldn't take it up. And so you ask me about, you know, we're not passing legislation that comes out of the Senate. They're not passing our legislation. We're the ones who have the power of the purse. Remember that. So all these fiscal policies that originate in the House, they should be taking up our legislation. I'm happy. Again, not everything in that Senate bill was bad, but they didn't do the job of actually securing the border. And so we can negotiate from those starting points and come up with something solid. But really, all of this is moot if the president just did his job and used his discretion, the existing authority he has under sections 1182 and 1225 of Title VIII. Again, it's all there. The laws exist. That's why we never had this crisis under any other American president, Republican or Democrat.
We're spending time with Congresswoman Nicole Malliotakis here on Bloomberg TV and radio as part of our coverage today on Balance of Power, the Republican from New York voting against that spending package today. And as we heard from Marjorie Taylor Greene a bit earlier, Congresswoman, it appeared to be the trigger for her would be a vote on Ukraine funding. Now that this budgeting process appears to be drawing to a close, is that the next matter that will be handled? Do you want to see Speaker Mike Johnson bring a Ukraine funding bill to the floor, whether it's tied to Israel funding or as a standalone?
I want the border secured in this country. I want this unsustainable crisis to end.
We're definitely hearing you on that.
I want shelters to be closed. But what I'm
so you want to have a border funding bill before you manage the matter of Ukraine?
If we can work something out where we can address both issues, I think that is the route that would most likely be taken and satisfy both parties in both houses. Because what's happening is you see Senator Schumer is so focused on Ukraine only, doesn't want to do anything on the border. House Republicans, yes, we want to support democracies and fighting against oppressors, but we want to secure our border first. So maybe there's an opportunity for us to address these issues together as a matter of a give and take. But for me to support sending more money overseas without securing our border, it is crippling this country. It is really a major problem. And I'm concerned as a New Yorker, we could potentially have a terrorist attack if we continue to have these open borders. We've catched terrorists at the border. Who knows how many are in the country already? There's been over 2 million gotaways that have evaded law enforcement, invaded government officials, and they're in this country. We don't know who they are, where they are, or what their intentions are. And that is what frightens me the most, and I'm not gonna be a part of this. And that's why I voted no to fund this agency that won't do its job.
All right, Congresswoman Nicole Malliotakis from New York joining us live from Capitol Hill today. Thank you.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. You can also listen live on Amazon Alexa from our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
We add the voice now of Denver Riggleman, the former congressman, is with us here. Of course, a former Republican congressman who joins us from time to time with a lot of news in the air today that we want to talk about. Denver, thank you for joining. There's a motion to vacate now filed against the speaker who just somehow got a funding bill passed with the help of Democrats. It came courtesy of Marjorie Taylor Greene. Does he deserve it?
I mean, my goodness, this is the real March Madness, isn't it? It's pretty nuts, performative politics. But based on a significant, I would say, portion of the membership of the GOP, they certainly think he deserves it because he sold out, you know, to the, in quotes, I'll put this in air quotes, you know, the globalist Democrats. So, yeah, I think that's what we have right now. And with this performative, I would say, bat crappery that you're seeing right now, I think it's just sort of amazing to me that she's still getting the type of media attention she's getting with these kind of ridiculous things like motions to vacate.
Well, we've heard from even Republicans who were involved in the motion to vacate against Kevin McCarthy, specifically the individual who brought it, the congressman from Florida, Matt Gaetz, suggested that he wouldn't want to support a motion to vacate because there was a likelihood that the House could elect a Democratic speaker, considering we're working with a very thin Republican majority here. Even if this were to work, if Marjorie Taylor Greene were to act on it and kick Johnson out, what would follow, Denver?
Chaos, the same thing that's followed in the 118th Congress since the beginning.
She said today she doesn't want chaos.
Well, I mean, what Marjorie Taylor Greene says and what she does are usually opposite things. And if you look at what happened today, right, you have somebody who's self-identified as a Christian nationalist going after Mike Johnson, who believes he's been called to be in that position, you know, by God, you know, almost have their own God on God violence here. Chaos is the only thing that gets Marjorie Taylor Greene media clicks. And if you looked at the pictures of her on the steps today, right, she was surrounded by media based on her motion to vacate. This is the performative crap that you're seeing right now. I think a preschool is more sophisticated than Congress right now. And I think that's the issue that you have is there's unserious people there. So what she says and what she does are two opposite things. And if you go back in her past, that's what she does. She's just there to get as many clicks as possible to be performative. And other people follow along because it helps with their fundraising and helps with their polling. And it could help in their elections coming up in this cycle.
So she has no intention of firing the Speaker of the House then, if I'm reading you right, Denver. And if that's the case, couldn't she end up strengthening Mike Johnson's hand if he appears to have survived this effort from Marjorie Taylor Greene and MAGA Inc.?
Marjorie Taylor Greene doesn't think that far ahead. Right now, she's auditioning to be in the Trump cabinet or be a Trump appointee.
Sure.
So when you look at the strategy of these individuals, it's so naked and so transparent. They're out there trying to actually, Mar-a-Lago is where they're getting their marching orders. So it's interesting the chaos that's being churned up right now. But it could be that Marjorie Taylor Greene is just a flank, you know, on the Trump type of, campaigning in order to push all these crazy narratives out there. And, you know, what she's doing, though, is she is setting the stage. Remember with McCarthy, this is sort of how it started happening, too, right? You have the first little poke that seems crazy, but it could be a way that they want to go. So, again, I think Mike Johnson needs to be careful. And when you look at the passing of the budget today, they barely got over the 2/3. You still see, I think, and you can fact check me, I think it was 134 Republicans voted against it. Does that sound correct? That's still a significant portion of the Republican conference. So, again, it's going to be really interesting to see where this craziness ends up over the next few months as the presidential campaign heats up.
112 Republicans voted against, but that is more than the 101 Republicans that voted for. To your point, Denver, the Hastert rule did not work in this case. It did not pass the majority of the majority. You were talking, though, about Donald Trump, how Marjorie Taylor Greene potentially would want to work in a second Trump administration. But we also know that former President Trump and Speaker Johnson are close and talk frequently. Would Donald Trump allow him to be ousted?
Well, he didn't have a big issue with McCarthy being ousted. I think Trump only cares about what happens for him in his presidential race. You know, he's not particularly close to Mike Johnson. If you noticed, you know, Trump uses loyalty like a stick, right? The loyalty only goes one way. So I would humbly submit, and I know both of you have your fingers on the pulse. I love talking to both of you. I would humbly submit that Donald Trump will do anything he can to ensure that he stays in the news, that his biggest supporter stays in the news. But as far as, you know, I would say extending loyalty to anybody, Donald Trump hasn't done it, and he's not about to start now. So Mike Johnson is expendable as anybody else.
Ken Buck is out today. Denver, we're down to two seats for Mike Johnson. People are hearing about the motion to vacate. I figure we'll fight and argue all summer throughout campaign season. Can we say that Republicans lost the House majority today?
Darn close to it. I mean, you still have a couple sane Republicans left in there. I mean, they're dwindling. But when you see things that happened today, when you see Marjorie Taylor Greene, when you see very important votes that really, really define what America needs to be, I think today that the Republicans are really on the ropes. And I'm really wondering about the 2024 elections. I'm wondering about the polling, what they're seeing in their crosstabs, what their base is expecting them to say. But I would say right now that the Republicans are going to have a tough time passing any type of agenda that pushes what Trump wants them to push. And there you go. Right now you're looking at what is going to happen to the GOP conference now. Ken Buck leaving, I think, is a great thing. It also put Lauren Boebert, you know, leveraged her also. So now things are getting a little nutty. And I really think in 2024, you're going to see a real shift. And I think you're going to see the Democrats take back the House. And I don't think it's going to be by 3 or 4 votes. I think they're going to do okay there at this point. But, you know, trying to tell the future in politics is very difficult. But again, I think right now they've effectively lost the ability to do much in Congress with any type of GOP agenda.
Well, on the subject of Democrats, we know that they did not act in any form to protect Speaker McCarthy when he was being ousted. Would you hope that they would act differently in the case of Mike Johnson? Should they, considering all of the political implications here you were just talking about?
You know, if you're looking at it, there's two ways here, right? If you're looking at it completely politically, there's no reason they should. You know, the Republicans made their bed with this insanity. You know, why would Democrats pull them out of their, you know, their flat spin, right? They went ahead and they killed both engines on their fighter jet. Now they're in a flat spin. You know, why should the Democrats help them eject? You know, on the other side, though, if you keep having this churn in speakers, even through before the 2024 election, it would be quite magnanimous of the Democrats to help Mike Johnson. And indeed, a few might. I still think, though, as far as politically and the presidential election coming in 2024, I think the Democrats would have a tough time actually supporting any speaker outside of a Democrat. What would be interesting is what is the flip? I think Matt Gaetz is sort of full of crap anytime he talks. You know, he's more like the human embodiment of a wet fart. But I do believe, right, that there could be some kind of possibility of moderates maybe coming up for a Democratic speaker. But again, it's politics. It's Congress. It's the 118th. Maybe the craziest Congress we've had in decades. I just don't see the Democrats crossing the line and helping any Republican speaker at this point.
Okay, having a little trouble with that one, Congressman. Let me just ask you lastly, will this pass the Senate tonight?
I think it will. You know, again, it's hard to tell the future, but I think this passes the Senate, and I think the budget passes tonight.
All right, Denver Riggleman, let's walk him out. The former congressman from an undisclosed location outside the blast radius in Virginia. We thank you for being with us, as always.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. Listen on demand wherever you get your podcasts or watch us live on YouTube.
It is Balance of Power. It's Friday, and boy, the news doesn't stop. You thought you might have a quiet day here. It's actually been quite the adventure. First thing you should know if you're just joining us is the House actually got it done. They passed the bill to avoid a shutdown to fund our government through September. It's on its way to the Senate now, and it was a convincing vote. I guess good for Speaker Mike Johnson. He had Democrats help him out, 286-134, but not so good for Mike Johnson. Conservative Republicans are very angry. The Freedom Caucus held an angry news conference at 9 o'clock this morning, and then Marjorie Taylor Greene, separately, the gentlewoman from Georgia, filed a motion to vacate, to fire the speaker, saying we need a new Speaker of the House. She did not make the filing privileged, so she can hang this over his head for the rest of this Congress, and did speak with reporters after she did so. Here's Marjorie Taylor Greene.
I do not wish to inflict pain on our conference and to throw the House in chaos, but this is basically a warning, and it's time for us to go through the process, take our time, and find a new Speaker of the House that will stand with Republicans and our Republican majority instead of standing with the Democrats.
All right, let's assemble the panel on this Friday. Rick Davis and Jeannie Shanzano are here by the grace of God. Bloomberg Politics contributors, our signature panel. Rick Davis, what in the world is going on in the House? Does Speaker Johnson actually have to worry about this? Just yesterday, people were talking about how he seemed like he was finally galvanizing support in his conference.
Yeah, I don't know how much he was finally galvanizing support. He was sweating getting over 100 Republicans on this bill. He finally got 134. So I'd say that's a comfortable margin. Didn't please Marjorie Taylor Greene very much. And I think she'd be offended that you called her the gentlewoman. There's nothing gentle about Marjorie Taylor Greene. That being said, I'd say she's probably one of the least problems he's got. One, he's got a conference that now is completely rudderless. And the next big thing on his agenda when they return in 2 weeks is going to be Ukraine funding. And he has no seeming solution on that. Secondarily, we'll talk about this in the course of today's program, but he has a massive funding hole between the Republicans in Congress and the Democrats in Congress for reelection. And that is not an easy thing to fix. So, and I'd say too, you know, maybe the third thing is not only is he upset Marjorie Taylor Greene, but I'm pretty sure the president, Donald Trump, is going to be pretty pissed off that this bill has passed the way it has. He'll echo the Freedom Caucus. And I suspect sometime in the very near future, we'll get an all caps social media post on Truth Social attacking the speaker. So he's got a bunch of problems headed his way.
Wow. Rick Davis with the reality check. Spokesman for Mike Johnson, Raj Shah, says the speaker, quote, always listens to the concerns of members, but is focused on governing. Unquote. Jeannie, if Marjorie Taylor Greene really wanted to fire the speaker, why wouldn't she make that filing privilege and get on with it in the next two legislative days?
Oh, Joe, are you asking me to look into the mind of Marjorie Taylor Greene? I simply cannot.
Take us with you.
You know, I was so hopeful for just a moment that minibus was rolling on by and then Marjorie Taylor Greene got on and threw the driver off, or at least she's trying. You know, I think she would like nothing more than to hang this over the speaker's head. You know, Rick was just mentioning one of the big things on the agenda when they get back from a 2 week recess, because yes, they too need a vacation now. Is going to be Ukraine funding. And that's something in those remarks that you were playing in her statement, she referenced. So I'm sure she would like to hear, you know, she would like to speak about that, and she would like to hang it over his head. And I think even more than this bill, a vote to fund Ukraine is going to set the former President Donald Trump into a tizzy. So a lot there to hang over Mike Johnson's head. But I think we need to remember we're in a very different time than we were in October when they had the motion to vacate for McCarthy. And I'm not convinced there is the will, certainly not with Democratic moderates, to do this all over again.
Wow. Boy, there's so much there. Rick, does a Ukraine vote trigger Marjorie Taylor Greene to activate this thing and fire the speaker? Is that what she was setting up today?
You know, I think what she was setting up today is her typical sort of, you know, performance pitch. You know, she needed something to go home to that she could lead the news in. She's extraordinarily good at it. Got us talking about it all day today. So I think that's all this is. She didn't pull the trigger on this because, frankly, she would have had a a horrible reaction from the vast majority of the caucus, right? She said, well, I don't want to upset the caucus. Well, then why do it at all? The reality of it is that nobody in this caucus is talking about wanting to expel Johnson from that seat. They have less than 7 months left potentially to be the majority party in the House. And the last thing they want to do is spend one more day trying to figure out who the next speaker is going to be. So she has a lot bigger problems trying to implement this than Ukraine policy. She'll have an entire caucus who will wonder, has she lost her mind? Do we really want to be doing this right before an election? And all these guys who are trying to get out and spend more time in their district running for re-election are going to be incensed by this, because the last thing they want to talk about is the third selection of a speaker in the course of 1 year.
Yeah. Jeannie, Tom Suozzi, of course, Democrat, newly elected, re-elected Democrat from New York, who's got the old, what was the George Santos seat, with its own peculiar politics, just said on CNN that he would vote to protect Mike Johnson if a motion to vacate were triggered. Are we on the eve of some sort of power-sharing agreement in which Democrats move to save him?
We could be. And that's what I was mentioning when I talked about moderate Democrats. I mean, forget about the Republicans right now. But in those, 22, 23 days of chaos that we all sat through with the Mike Johnson, Kevin McCarthy motion to vacate last year, you know, one of the big questions was, what would the Democrats do? Would they have some kind of agreement with Republicans to save Kevin McCarthy? And of course, in the end, they didn't do that. But we're in a very different moment right now. We are in an election year. You have Democrats like Tom Suozzi, who you just mentioned, from, you know, he just won a special election in Long Island. He's up again in November. Is he really going to want to talk to this purplish district about the chaos in the House as they go to try to find another speaker? No. And that's why he's saying right now, I would work across the aisle, which is what he's been talking about. I would work across the aisle to save the speaker because, quite frankly, Republicans cannot govern themselves. And Joe, can we just mention the other bit of chaos here in the House? Ken Buck leaves today. That
yeah,
is a
there you go.
Majority. So it just is a pile on. But to your point, I do think we see these purplish Democrats are not going to be sticking with any other Democrats in safe seats who want to do what they did last time with Kevin McCarthy. I think in this case, they probably will try to work to save the speaker.
Pretty incredible to see these numbers continue to dwindle. Rick, is this just a media thing? We talk about a power-sharing agreement, Hakeem Jeffries coming to the rescue. Would Mike Johnson even want that? Could you be a credible Republican leader having been saved by Democrats?
No, I mean, you'd be a lame duck the minute that vote was taken. In other words, you might be able to serve out the rest of the term in this Congress, you know, to January post-election, even if there was a Republican majority in 2025, it'd be highly unlikely at that stage that, one, Democrats would want to actually save Johnson again, because he hasn't proven that he could do any bipartisan deals with them anyway, right? That's just to avoid chaos. And two, Republicans don't want him. So within the caucus, they're not even going to push him forward as a candidate because they'll believe that he's abandoned the Republican caucus, you know, to take league with the Democrats. So no matter what happens, this is highly likely to be the beginning of the end of the Johnson era. And I'm not even sure how to characterize it after today's vote, but we'll have plenty of time between now and January to talk about that.
Well, I guess we will. This is a fundraiser, right? Jeannie, Rick mentioned the disparity in funding between Democrats and Republicans in the House, not unlike what we're seeing between Joe Biden and Donald Trump, the DNC and RNC. Does Hakeem Jeffries take this to the bank?
Yeah, you know, this is just startling because as polls show, and you mentioned the disparity between Biden and Trump, and of course, the disparity we know now between Republicans and Democrats in the House, you know, polls showing one thing, which is that Donald Trump is, you know, ahead in these swing states that we've been looking at with the Bloomberg poll. And yet, when you look at the fundraising advantage Joe Biden has, and now the Democrats in the House, you'd much rather be on the Democratic side of all of this. You know, we have seen with Donald Trump in the past, and we do see it with some of the fire brands, that maybe they can get away with getting free advertising, like the kind that Marjorie Taylor Greene is getting today. But for the entire House, that is much more of a challenge. And so these numbers matter. And this is a big boon for Hakeem Jeffries, who has done a really remarkable job filling the shoes of Nancy Pelosi, obviously with her assistance. And of course, you know, also we have to admit, has the easier job in the minority than being in the majority and trying to be Speaker of the House, sure, especially with this Republican caucus.
Well, the numbers don't lie. The NRCC, the Republican group, raised $8.2 million in February, $45 million cash on hand. Its Democratic counterpart raised $14.5 million the same time and has over $59 million in the bank. You're an expert on fundraising, Rick. Is this Hakeem Jeffries outperforming or Republicans underperforming because they don't have Kevin McCarthy?
Probably a little of both. I think Hakeem Jeffries understands the value of fundraising. He's had the support of Nancy Pelosi to help continue that. She was an unbelievable fundraiser, and now he is. And look at the difference. Kevin McCarthy, who was an outstanding fundraiser for Republicans, will not lift a finger for this crowd inside the House of Representatives. And so a completely untested fundraiser who, you know, would be at the lower quarter of the caucus in funds raised in his history, you know, had to take this over in the middle of all these fights they're having in Congress over spending. And he's had to travel around to 50 cities and try and raise money. And, you know, I'd say he's actually doing better than I would have given him credit for, but he's had everything working against him. Bottom line, and Jeannie mentioned Tom Suozzi, you know, he was able to put millions more to work in that special election in Long Island than his Republican counterpart. And that had to matter in the outcome of the election. So when you look at these swings districts, and there are only probably 20 of them, you have to look and say, if they're going to put millions to work in each one of those districts that Republicans don't have, if Democrats outspend each of those races, you got to give them some advantage to that, regardless of what kind of election cycle you're in.
Did Republicans just lose the House today, Jeannie?
You know, I wouldn't say they lost it, but, you know, with a 2-seat margin at this point today, it is going to be very tight. There are not, because of gerrymandering, that many seats that are up for grabs. So that's why this fundraising advantage matters so much, as does the organizational aspect. And, you know, this is one thing we don't talk enough about in American politics. Expertise and experience matters. And that's what Rick was just mentioning with Mike Johnson. Yeah. You know, he is untested, but he also does not have the Kevin McCarthy or the Nancy Pelosi fundraising experience background. That's why when people talk about term limits, I always shudder, because the expertise and experience in governing matters. And we're seeing it today as it impacts campaigns.
Well, you picked quite a day to join us here on Balance of Power with the help of Jeannie Shanzano and Rick Davis, our panel. I'm Joe Matthew in Washington.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. You can also listen live on Amazon Alexa from our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
Joining us now, Dave Ehrenberg on a Friday. Diamond Dave is with us. Palm Beach County State's Attorney. It's great to see you, sir. Welcome back to Washington.
Joe, it is great to be back.
I'm always looking at the Zoom to see you. You're sitting right next to me now. What's important to you? A couple of big things are going to happen Monday. I just mentioned one of them. The former president's going to be in court in New York. Mm-hmm. The Alvin Bragg case that was going to start Monday is being delayed because of recently disclosed evidence. We talked about that. Are we going to get a new trial date Monday?
Yes, and I think it's going to be in April. Judge Mershon wants this to go, and Alvin Bragg came out with a fire brief. It was a takedown of Donald Trump, showing that Trump's all about delays. This is a stall tactic. And of the 170,000 new documents that Trump says, well, we got to take all this time to review, only about 270 pertain to this case. And of the 270, most of them are what you call inculpatory, meaning incriminating. They help the prosecution, not the defense. Uh-huh. So Judge Marchand, I think, is not going to delay this any further.
Okay. Bragg had said about 30 days would be appropriate. That's about what we get then.
Yeah, I mean, and
Trump wants 90 days. Do they slice that down the middle, or what do you do in a case like that?
Trump actually wants half past never.
Okay, well, yes, of course.
No. I think that after the 30 days expires, which is in, I believe it's either April 15th or 25th, then it's going to go to trial. I am convinced about it.
Okay.
And you can read the tea leaves by Judge Marchand's latest ruling, which was all in favor of the prosecution. And Alvin Bragg reminded Judge Marchand, look, he's done this to you, man. You know, he didn't call him man. You don't call a judge man, but no. Your Honor, he tried to get you disqualified from the case because he said you're biased.
Right.
And yet this is what he does. He tries to slow everything down. Don't fall prey to it. And I think that Judge Marchand's going to set it.
Amazing. Okay. A 6-week trial is what was estimated. That means a criminal trial will take place before the election. Just a couple of weeks ago, there was a thought that this may never happen.
Right, because there was the thought that there was some bad faith, that the prosecutors withheld documents, and then they could be punished for it. But it turns out that it wasn't the state prosecutors, it was the feds. So number one, the state prosecutors are saying, don't call a foul on me when someone else did this. It's not even our team.
Right.
And number two, it turns out that the feds did not screw up. The feds didn't get these documents until the FBI gave the federal prosecutors the documents in December. And then Trump didn't even request additional documents until mid-January.
Yeah.
So this is not a violation. No harm, no foul. This thing is going to trial.
All right. A separate case we have to delineate here could lead to the seizure of Donald Trump's properties. This is the civil case in New York. It appears he may not be able to post bond, which is a lot of money here, tens of millions of dollars. Unless, of course, this SPAC deal magically falls in his lap on Monday, which is a really interesting wrinkle in this story. But how quickly could that happen? Authorities in New York are actually taking the preemptive steps to begin seizing properties in Westchester County.
Yeah, $464 million is the bond here. That's a surety bond. And no one's loaning that to him. No one's giving that to him.
Right.
Trump could borrow against the SPAC, perhaps, and get the money that way. Or he could get a wealthy friend, maybe a foreign actor, to donate, and that's what we have to watch for.
Amazing.
But Monday's a big day. It's not just a New York case. It's the fact that that's a deadline for him to post the bond, or else Letitia James, the AG of New York, gets to start moving ahead to seize his property, to put liens on his property. Now, she's already started to do that, at least put liens in Westchester County, New York.
Right. Yeah.
But it's a process. And so that is D-Day for Donald Trump. So
Monday
mark
is,
your calendars.
Yeah. The deadline for the bond and the New York trial, in which he'll be present for that, both happen on the 25th of March.
Right.
How quickly could she start seizing properties, or this is just talk to scare Donald Trump into finding some money?
She's going to issue liens right away. She's going to encumber it right away. And as far as how long it takes to actually take possession, I don't know. But I do think that it will cause great headaches for Trump. And I think part of the issue is that Trump can't sell the properties right away because it'll be a fire sale this late date. Plus, I think a lot of his stuff is encumbered. So this will be further encumbered. You know, he said he was the king of debt.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of debt here. Now, just because he cannot, and if he cannot, post the bond, doesn't mean he can't appeal the judgment. He's going to continue to appeal. It just means, though, that the state can go ahead and start collecting his assets if he doesn't
post
that bond.
Even as he appeals, though.
If he doesn't post the bond.
Right.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Are these properties worth $450 million combined when you add the debts, or do we don't know that yet?
When you add the debts, no. I think that's why he can't get the surety bond, because if it were, or if it was liquid, I think they would be more willing, but it hasn't happened.
Why doesn't she take Trump Tower?
I think it's encumbered.
Is that on the list? Encumbered.
Everything's on
the
list.
So this is worthless for the state, then?
No, not necessarily. Well, this is Bloomberg, so I'm not going to get into fancy, like, you know,
that's
who
good.
Gets
no,
to go first
yeah,
financial
not,
conversation.
Absolutely.
But that's for the experts. But I can talk to you from a legal standpoint as a prosecutor that Letitia James already has her eyes on certain properties. I mean, look, Westchester County, she's already moved ahead with the process of putting liens, so he can't just, you know, sell them under her nose.
Right. April 25th is another big date when the Supreme Court hears arguments on the immunity claim, presidential immunity. based on your judgment at this point, having some have some time to think about this and knowing what other levers the Trump team could pull, is there a chance that that trial happens before the election if the Supreme Court rules against Donald Trump?
Yeah, you remember the movie Dumb and Dumber? So you're saying I got a chance?
Yes, exactly.
Yes, there's a chance. Okay. But the Supreme Court would have to dispose of the issue, and it would be the end of June. And then the judge, or Judge Chutkan, who's a great judge and she's all business, she would have to cut short the days that she gives Trump to prepare. She originally said 88 more days, but that wouldn't work. So now you have all these new delays. I think she says, you know, I said 88, but that was before the Supreme Court gave you additional delays, so we're going to cut it back to 40 days. And then it could go. And here's the other thing. Mm-hmm. The Department of Justice told the court in the Mar-a-Lago case that we don't have to abide by the 60-day rule. We can go to trial even 60 days before an election. That 60-day rule that says that the DOJ cannot prosecute someone applies to grand jury proceedings and investigations, not to cases that have already been indicted.
Fascinating. I still want one of those pins. It's much cooler than the congressional pins that you see the members wear. Those, you know, you get the badge is just much cooler. If
this
you
is
can
a,
see that on YouTube.
It's a bit of a ruse, Joe. This is not my own pin. This is the DA of Plymouth, Massachusetts, Tim Cruz.
How about that?
A Republican,
my
mind
own stomping
you.
Ground. No kidding.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you guys share these things? You must have worked on something together.
He gives them out at our meetings,
really?
Our conferences, and because, you know, I don't want to have to take one off, so when I just keep this on.
I can't wear that, though, right? That's like Herschel Walker with a badge. I'm not a real DA. I can't do that. Great to see you in the nation's capital. Dave Ehrenberg, Palm Beach County State's Attorney, with the way forward for Donald Trump. Remember this conversation on Monday. We're going to be talking a lot about both of these cases and whether properties could be seized next. I'm Joe Matthew in Washington. It's Balance of Power, only on Bloomberg. Thanks for listening to the Balance of Power podcast. Make sure to subscribe if you haven't already at Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can find us live every weekday from Washington, D.C. at noontime Eastern at Bloomberg.com.